Hello, I'm Jane Crowther, Editor-in-Chief of Total Film, and this is Inside Total Film, our weekly podcast covering everything you need to see on streaming at the moment, obviously nothing to see at the big screen. This week, I've got our news editor, Jordan Farley, with me.
Hello.
And our deputy editor, Matt Matum.
Hello.
This week, we'll be taking a look at Chris Hemsworth's new Netflix actioner, Extraction, Brit debut indie, Calm with Horses, and cockle warmer, Astronaut. Plus, we'll be testing your action brains with a quiz, and we'll be discussing the movies we've watched uncomfortably with our families. So should we get to that first then, boys? A reader, Harry McReady, asks what films we've ever watched with our families and regretted. Why are you laughing? Go on, tell us.
Horrible memories.
Tell us, Matt.
Memories. Well, the first one that sprung to mind with this question was True Lies. I'd have been around 10 years old when it came out on VHS, and I'm obviously thinking specifically about that scene with Jamie Lee Curtis where she's on that fake mission and has to basically strip off for this mysterious guy who's obviously her husband, Arnold Schwarzenegger. I obviously didn't know what I was getting myself in for. I was just expecting a high-octane Arnie action movie, of course. No Arnie film I'd ever seen previously had any kind of expression of sexuality in it or anything. And then I was hit with this, with like my parents and brothers in the room, and it was just that classic sat stock still, pinned back to the sofa, like desperately needing to kind of gulp, but sort of waiting till the scene was over. And then, yeah, I think there was just a kind of massive sigh of relief from everyone when it was finished and we got back to like blowing things up, basically.
Oh, I'm glad you said blowing things up there. I wondered where that was going. Did your parents say anything?
I don't think any of us ever acknowledged it.
As it should be. Jordan, how about you?
Well, this is one where I'm vaguely thankful for, you know, those terrible like ITV edits of films where they would cut out all the horrible violence and nudity and change all the swearing. Like, I remember watching Die Hard quite young and it being no problem because they just changed all the motherfuckers to melon farmers, etc., etc. But I do have a few for various reasons. I remember Don John, Joseph Gordon-Levitt's film. I remember having Netflix at the time and being very excited that I had like a VPN so I could watch American Netflix films. And I'd heard that Don John was great, but I don't think it had actually come out in the UK yet. So I just thought, oh, let's watch this, and just took total leave of my senses, thinking, oh, it can't be an issue. And then we watched it and I was just deeply embarrassed for a long time after that.
And did your parents say anything?
No, we're British. So obviously we kept completely silent and never spoke about it again.
Just shifted uncomfortably on the sofa.
Exactly.
Similarly, mine's a sexual one in terms of my dad always used to go to the video shop and get something. Obviously, with video shops back in the day, you couldn't always get the thing you wanted, that other people might have got it. And so the thing we wanted was out. So he just brought back something that the guy in the shop had said was really good, and it was Fatal Attraction. Obviously quite violent and not the film we thought. And knowing nothing about it, just started watching it. But as soon as they're shagging with her ass in the sink and, you know, boob out in the elevator, my mum was like, what rating is this, Keith? And my dad... furiously like looking at the box, and we realized deliciously that we were watching something we absolutely shouldn't be, and we did actually turn it off. That was my parents' reaction. Sadly.
Did you ever watch the end of it?
Yeah, when did you get to finish it?
Well, that didn't have to go back for a while, did it, in the days? So we obviously watched it secretly when my mum was cooking tea.
That's something I miss about video rentals, actually, that whatever the film was, even if we didn't particularly like it, we'd just always watch it again the next morning before returning it, just to get
your money's
value
worth
out of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
I remember watching Tommy Lee Jones' vehicle Volcano about half a dozen times, even though it's a pretty terrible film, purely because we rented it and I wanted to make the most of it. So I have that image of that man sort of being melted into the lava on the train tracks, just burnt into my memory in more ways than one, because I've seen it like about a dozen times.
Yeah, quality. Wonderful moments and wonderful times. Do let us know if you've had some embarrassing and awkward family watching over the lockdown. You probably have watched films that you didn't mean to or that were thoroughly inappropriate. Doesn't have to be sexual, could also be horribly violent or whatever else, or even just boring, which we might get to with one of our films we're talking about today. I'm just giving a hint there, boys, of one of my reviews of the films we're looking at. Shall we have a look at this new release and hope it isn't awkward viewing?
This is an extraction.
So who are the players?
Biggest drug lord in India versus biggest drug lord in Bangladesh.
Some mythic shit, huh?
It's a kidnapping. Drug lord's son. Clock's running at 16 hours. Proof of life as of 6 hours ago.
Shh.
That was Extraction, which is the new Netflix film starring Chris Hemsworth as a mercenary sent in to retrieve a kidnapped boy who's been taken from his home in Mumbai and taken to Dhaka in Bangladesh. It's directed by a former stuntman from Marvel, Sam Hargrave, and it's pretty full on. What did you think? Did you like it? It's 2 hours of full on fisticuffs. Was it for you, Jordan?
In some ways, yes. In other ways, no. The thing about it is it's purely a showcase for an up and coming action director, basically, as well as being the stunt coordinator on a lot of films, including many Marvel films. Sam Hargrave, the director, was also the second unit director on Endgame, Infinity War, and Atomic Blonde and Deadpool 2, the David Leitch film. So that's sort of his background. So you sort of know what to expect from the action.
Yeah.
You know it's going to be really full on. You know it's going to be really intricate, incredibly violent. This is an 18-rated film. Yeah. And as far as I can tell, that's based exclusively on how violent it is. There's not really anything else to it.
And the fact that kids are just killed.
Within six minutes,
a child is shot in the head and then another one's thrown off a building.
So this film's incredibly nuanced take on the child soldier crisis is for Tyler Rake, who's Chris Hemsworth's character, this mercenary character, to basically just slap around a load of child soldiers, which is very bizarre.
That was a very bizarre scene.
Again, it's incredibly violent like the rest of the film, but it's also vaguely comical because he's just kind of throwing them around like ragdolls because he's like, you know, this 6.5-foot god and they're just these young children. It's very bizarre. I mean, if you like your action, if you like to see fight scenes staged with a bit of verve, you're not going to go too far wrong with this, but if you really want anything more from a film beyond that, you're probably best looking elsewhere.
Yeah, I mean, you're not going to get any sort of social commentary. You're not going to get any real idea of Bangladesh, especially given that it was mostly filmed in Thailand. You're not going to really understand the world of mercenaries. What you are going to understand is how you can kill someone with a rake and the amazing cinematography, I have to say, of Sam Hargreave, who basically, as a stuntman, tied handheld onto himself and followed the action himself bodily, whether that's through windscreens, across buildings. I mean, he throws himself off a building after Hemsworth at some point. There's the scene where, like, basically it's a foot chase, a car chase, a foot chase, a truck chase. Mm-hmm. Is astonishing, isn't it? What did you think, Matt?
That was one particularly impressive scene. Like, kind of there's this central action scene, like you say, it's almost like 1917 sort of sped up a bit, where they're just running through these buildings. There's just constant kind of goons to shoot down, basically just these kind of faces, people that he's just mowing down the whole way through. And then, yeah, like you say, it's kind of in and out of vehicles. It's incredibly fast. It is very, very impressively put together how that scene's done. But yeah, the rest of it, I found like the action was felt very modern and up to date, but everything else felt quite dated about this, really. It did feel a sort of a throwback to those old kind of man on a mission action movies from the sort of 80s, 90s.
It's funny you mentioned True Lies, because it sort of felt like in that theme that it was Hemsworth doing True Lies, but just with really great action.
Like David Harbour, you may know from Stranger Things, pops up kind of briefly in this film as an old friend of Rake who like owes him a favour. And just from the moment he shows up, you just know exactly what's going to happen with his character and where it's going. And it just feels like a real relic.
I mean, the characterisation of Rake is non-existent here, isn't it? I mean, this is a guy who we learn about basically by the fact that he meditates at the bottom of swimming holes in Australia, which is just weird.
The jumping off giant cliffs.
He tombstones off a cliff and then like sits cross-legged at the bottom of a pool, and that's basically as much as we get from him until a little bit later when we get a reveal that we thoroughly expected to come.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you get these little flashback snippets along the way, but I thought they were pretty cringeworthy, and when anytime the film strains for any sort of emotion, just didn't work at all. It was just you're in this for the action. Yeah, you're in this for the action, and that's it, really.
You mentioned mowing people down. People had a problem with Six Underground with the sort of body count and the sort of porn of killing people. This has a high body count, doesn't it?
Yeah, extraordinarily high. They sort of try to get around it because the people that Rake is killing throughout the film are mostly faceless, either corrupt police officers or army officers or just armed goons of this drug lord who runs Dakar. So you're not meant to have any kind of empathy for these people he's killing, but obviously you do because they're human beings and they're getting killed often in quite horrible ways. He's not really a hero in any way.
And it's not really a nuanced take, obviously, as we were saying, but I mean, just the fact how these corrupt police and people would have got into these positions, it's not like they're all inherently evil and we're not really kind of given much to go on with them, but they're still pretty kind of indiscriminate, just blowing people away.
There was one aspect that I found slightly interesting in that the kind of main adversary he's facing up against at the start of the film. I think he's called Sanju. He has a bit of a character arc, which I thought was at least an attempt to do something a little bit different with this type of film. Because he's not entirely the villain he's portrayed as at the start. But beyond that, everyone he's up against is just a total cartoon villain, basically.
Many of these people would not have been in these roles because they thought, I'll be evil. We're talking about Bangladesh, where people are taking jobs because they need to feed their family. So if you think about it from that point of view, you're like, that's a family screwed. Oh, and there's like six people there that have just been killed and that person's been mowed down. And
so that scene in Austin Powers just ruined every
exactly. That's what I was thinking about. So yeah, you really have to watch this and take it with a pinch of salt, don't you? Don't look for any sort of depth whatsoever. This is surface only. And from that point of view, if you are looking for something that's a 2 hours of adrenaline, it kind of works, doesn't it?
Yeah, more or less. The other thing I found quite interesting about it was it seemed to have a weird sense of humor about itself as well, because there's this odd scene in the middle where Rake and this child who, you know, he's been sent into Dakar to extract, called Ovi, they're kind of talking about Rake's name, and then they're kind of taking the mick out of his name, and it's like, do you want us to take this film seriously, or are you just going to make fun of your main character in the middle of it? Yeah, it's a bit of a bizarre one.
I don't know the comic that it's sort of based, loosely based on. Is he called that in the comic? Do we know?
Yes, I only know that because I looked it up before the time and actually read it. But yeah, he is called Tyler Rake in the graphic novel, yeah.
Which seems even weirder then to take the piss out of your IP.
Yeah, exactly. Especially if you want to try and make some kind of franchise out of it. Probably don't humiliate your main character in the middle of your film, but whatever.
I wondered that as well. Jane alluded to this earlier, but early on, so no spoilers, but he does actually kill someone with a rake as well.
Yes, he does.
Like, is this a visual gag, or is this just like, do they call a rake something different in,
it's got to be.
In Australia?
Yeah.
And, you know, you've just mentioned sort of franchise, no spoilers again, but there is a sort of element of an open-ended ending there. Is this going to be something that Chris Hemsworth could do more of? Do you think people would want more of this?
I personally am happy with one film, but it's a good time for an audience. Lots of people on lockdown are going to be looking for something to watch. And at the moment, this feels like the biggest kind of summer blockbuster we have this year.
I have to say, it does feel really big in ambition, in scope. You know, if you're fiending for those Bond stunts, the action in this certainly sort of ticks that box for me.
It felt sort of almost on a level with John Wick and Sam's work in Atomic Blonde, certainly in terms of that car chase and in terms of the hand-to-hand combat and all the gunplay and stuff. Like, you have all those fun moments where people are reloading their guns in the middle of firefights, like pinning people to walls with the barrel of their guns so they can't move while they're reloading and stuff like that. There is a lot of inventive stuff going on in here, and it does feel like big scale. It almost feels a little bit odd that it's on Netflix. Like, I'm surprised that they weren't able to get the funding to put this in cinemas, but it's a moot point now that cinemas are closed.
It's so fast and frantic and non-stop as well that you kind of don't get that much chance to really think about its flaws while it's going on, because it's just a kind of constant assault. So again, yeah, if you're after that kind of fairly mindless entertainment, it does tick a box for sure.
And from a point of view of Chris Hemsworth, obviously, you know, the Avengers phase that he's been in is over. He's obviously got Love and Thunder coming up, but, you know, he's looking for his next big thing. And this is pretty good. You know, he's pretty good in it, isn't he? I mean, in terms of what it asks of him, it's just to be really physical. And he delivers in spades on that.
Yeah, he's a perfect match for what's asked of him. I mean, in the same way, again, with Keanu and John Wick, like, he was perfect for that role because they tailored the action to him as an actor. And I think they've done the same thing with Chris Hemsworth, where you can't imagine anyone else playing this character just because the physicality matches him so perfectly.
Yeah, I was exhausted watching it, and especially when I read afterwards that apparently he'd do 12-hour filming day and then go and do 3 or 4 hours like rehearsal for the next scene the next day. He is so fit. He'd have to be to even complete this. And so in terms of believability for this character, you know, you might think, oh, how could this person possibly be able to do that? But when you know that Hemsworth actually sort of completed that level of physicality in the day and in the evening and then did it all again the next day for 9 weeks, it's pretty impressive, and it adds that sort of believability to it. So that's Extraction, which hits Netflix on Friday, the 24th of April. I think we're going to recommend that one, aren't we?
Yeah, just about. If you've got nothing else to watch.
Its lack of competition definitely helps it at the moment. If it was in a sort of busier field, perhaps not.
Okay.
Well, it has got some competition this week, right?
It does have some competition on a sort of different way, but still pretty violent and pretty physical. Shall we take a look at this one?
I'm told I was a violent child. I can hurt people. Most people know to stay on the right side of the Devers family. I'm what you meet if you ever find yourself on the wrong side.
That was Calm with Horses. This is a film that we've talked about previously on the podcast, but is now streaming across platforms from Monday the 27th of April. Set it up for us, Matt. What's this about?
Yeah, well, this is a film we championed sort of right from the beginning, really. And it got a bit of an unfair run of it at the cinema, really, because it came out just before the cinemas all closed, really. So it was a time where people were already starting to get a bit cautious about going in, and then just everything was shut. So it just didn't really get a fair shot, really, for people to see it. So hopefully, you know, this digital release, people might be tempted. Basically, it's the story of this guy called Arm, former boxer, who's now a kind of heavy. He's like the muscle for this family of gangsters, basically, this crime family in Ireland. And we're basically just following him, really. He's played by Cosmo Jarvis, who you might remember from Lady Macbeth. It's a real kind of proper breakout performance from him as this kind of like quiet but tough but tender kind of, you know, guy who's drawn into this situation sort of against his will, and he never seems to really have that much control over his own life. He just kind of drifts along. Yeah, it's just basically goes from there, really. And it's how he interacts with this crime family called the Devers, the young lad of that family played by Barry Keoghan. He's his right-hand man, basically, and he does all his dirty work and all his beatings and anything like that that's needed. That's the basic of the plot, really.
I mean, he's given a task, Arm is given a task, and he makes a bad choice, and then it unravels from there, doesn't it, in a sort of spectacular way. I loved this film. I saw it at Toronto last year, which who knows if we'll have a Toronto Film Festival this year. And it was one of the most exciting films I saw there. Just so muscular and visceral and moving as well. Did you like it, Jordan?
I found this completely gripping, actually, both as a character study of this just sort of mob enforcer and the fact that he has this different side to his character as well, because not only is he, you know, beating people up for a living, but he has this autistic 5-year-old son who he's quite distant from and he's trying to become closer to. And he's sort of torn between these two worlds, and I just found it very moving how he really struggles with that. It's very well directed, as you say, very muscular, and you have this exceptional sort of car chase in the middle of it, and you have these really tense sequences, this moment on the beach where he's sent to sort of, you know, off this guy, and it's just excruciating to watch because he's sort of pleading for his life, and it's really accomplished and really well put together for a debut feature.
The director is Nick Rowland. It is his feature debut. The thing he really achieves that's amazing in this is the tension and maintaining that tension. I mean, basically from the minute it starts out, you're just gritting your teeth like, oh God, because there's just this threat of violence and death all the time. And you mentioned that car chase. That's in like a Toyota Corolla battered old car on an Irish sort of farm track. It doesn't sound at all exciting. I properly like had a aching jaw from watching it because I'd been clenching my teeth so hard. I was so anxious watching it and really worried for Arm. And I think that's probably where it succeeds that possibly Extraction didn't. I really cared about Arm. I really wanted the best for him. I wanted him to find a way out of this violent life with Rake, really couldn't give a toss. And so that sort of emotional pull is really pretty accomplished from Roland.
Yeah, you're just really hoping that Arm's going to make the right choice and just stop going down this self-destructive path that he's on, because he does have a future there just out of reach. And you're just really like praying that he'll just grasp onto it and not, you know, continue down the wrong road.
Yeah, it's very sort of Shakespearean in a way, isn't it? The sort of the rise and fall of a man and the sort of situation. And it's timeless and universal. And even though it's very specifically Irish, I think anyone could relate to that situation.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it feels kind of out of time in a sense that you don't really see much in the way of mobile phones and that kind of thing. So that adds to that sort of timeless quality. Like you do feel like you could transplant it anywhere, really.
Yeah, like Dimna has this, what does he have? Like he has like an ancient Nokia or something. So
acid washed jeans. Yeah, you can't really put your finger on when exactly it's set, but I think that aids it, because a lot of the scenes where the sort of tension is created, you might think, why doesn't he just use his iPhone, why doesn't he just sat nav this, but the fact that it's sort of this, it could be at any time, helps that sort of ambiguity and that anxiety of what might happen next.
Yeah, it wouldn't be the same film if they were just GPS tracking him throughout. Like there wouldn't be much of a chase going on there.
Find my iPhone. Oh, there you are. I'll come and kill you. Yeah, so we can highly recommend this film this week.
100%.
Yeah. Okay, so that is available across all platforms from Monday the 27th. Okay, so I feel like we've got our heart rates up now with those two. Shall we calm down a bit and get a little bit cozy with something else?
Let's do it.
You're going to be an astronaut.
Can I come?
What?
Time to fly.
I ain't gonna get another opportunity, and I'd be a damn fool to let this one pass. You know I have to do this.
I know you do.
He's a brilliant man.
He still is.
Okay, so this is Astronaut, which is available on all platforms from Monday the 27th of April as well. It stars Richard Dreyfuss. What's he up to, Jordan? What's he doing in this?
In an echo of Close Encounters, he's hoping to go into space. He stars as Angus Stewart. He's a retired widower who always dreamed of, you know, heading into the stars, but never quite made it. At the start of the film, he's living in the same house as his daughter and her husband, Jim. And eventually he kind of goes into this retirement home. And it's here that he learns about this lottery to win a seat on the first commercial flight into space set up by this Elon Musk-esque billionaire played by Colm Feore. He's obviously entirely unsuitable for winning this lottery for a number of reasons, not least of which is the fact that he's about 10 years too old to even enter the competition. But he does enter anyway, and he ends up getting through to the final 12. And it kind of goes from there. I don't want to say too much beyond that. Despite this film's sort of many shortcomings, and even though it's transparently manipulative throughout, this film did actually charm me quite a lot. I don't know if I'm just suffering from isolation madness, but I actually found it quite moving and sweet at points. I kind of like the way that it's almost like a companion piece to Close Encounters, in the sense that Angus shares a lot of these, you know, obsessive passions for what's out there and this just compulsive desire to head into space. I can imagine that was a lot of the appeal for Dreyfuss, that it did feel almost like a bookend to what he was doing 40 years ago with Steve and Spielberg.
I feel like that's the only thing that's going to appeal, just that connection and the fact you get a bit of a twinkle from Richard Dreyfuss. But I can't say I found it completely charmous. It did have a slight charm to it and is inoffensive, but everything's just so clearly signposted. I mean, it can't kind of escape its low budget.
Yeah, it feels very small screen, doesn't it?
Like, as I don't think we mentioned, but this was originally intended as a cinema release, but, you know, with the cinemas closed, they decided to go straight to digital. And this is one of those films that will lack absolutely nothing watching it on a small screen. It feels just much more suited. There's, you know, despite the space theme, there's not really any kind of major set pieces.
You don't even get space, really, do you?
It's not
what
that
you do,
film,
what you
really
do get a lot of, though, is civil engineering. And
a lot.
I've learned, you know, quite a bit about freeze-thaw shadowing. I don't know about you, and about limestone.
An oolite.
An oolite.
Which is a word that's comically overused in this film.
I don't think I really wanted that much civil engineering in my life. I didn't feel I needed it. I just found it really boring, I'm sorry to say. Sorry, Richard.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd go as far as say boring, but I just found like, they bang on about certain things just too much. They don't make it interesting. Like, sort of great films will make a subject you're not interested in interesting, but this doesn't make civil engineering particularly interesting.
We should say the reason that they're sort of talking about civil engineering is because the runway for this rocket may or may not be unsuitable for its purpose. So a lot of it is just Richard Dreyfuss, old man shouting at a cloud going, it's going to go wrong. It's going to break, which is not the film you expect from a film called Astronaut. You expect him to, you know, be an astronaut.
They just keep playing the same clip of him talking about it again and again. Like,
oh yeah, the YouTube clip.
He's got like a grandchild in the film who he's very close to, you know, and that they have sort of a nice little bond, and he records him talking about it, and they just play it again just to make sure you just haven't missed, you know, that there's potentially something
freeze thaw shadowing.
Runway. Another thing which I found somewhat distracting, I don't know if you guys found this as well, but is this competition that Jordan mentioned when he was setting up the film, you know, that this billionaire guy, sort of Elon Musk, Richard Branson type, who's kind of launching a commercial space flight. Obviously that would be like kind of a big deal, but any time someone turns on the TV or the radio, they're talking about it, and it's like that's all it ever is, and that kind of took me out of it a bit. It just felt a bit too clumsy in that way. I never quite really believed that this was a, you know, a real world. It just felt very much like you could feel the script being written, you know, as you were watching it. It was one of those for me, really.
And equally, the big dramatic point that maybe this guy knows something that this huge corporation doesn't. Just feels like, why would they not have had engineers look at this? Why would they not have, you know, no, Elon Musk or Richard Branson would not send their first one off if they thought there was a chance of it going completely wrong. Why would they? They're businessmen. So it just felt very convenient and just not truthful at all. And I felt the same about the retirement home that he was put in with all of these kooky, oh, aren't old people cute when they're sort of got mental health problems or have had a stroke? They're so sweet. And I just thought, God, this is such a shame that the opportunity there is for this is a story you don't probably see very much, you know, a man in his 70s and the life he wants to lead and the fact that he still has ambitions and he still has dreams he wants to realize, and why shouldn't he have them, is sort of completely pissed up the wall with the rest of the characterization of the old people who are just these ridiculous cardboard cutouts. So it actually just made me bored and angry.
I have to say, I actually quite enjoyed the retirement.
Oh, Jordan. You're a fan of Cocoon, right?
I found them gently amusing. I mean, I can't say that they're, you know, it's great art, but it passed the time.
Okay, so a gentle, whimsical, sweet, small screen film. That's how I would put it. What about you guys? Would you recommend it?
Again, if you really have nothing better to watch, go wild, but don't go out of your way to watch it.
All right, so that's out on all platforms from Monday, the 27th of April. Okay, do you want to test your brain cells with a quiz? Since we had a lot of action this week, we thought we'd do an action quiz. You haven't seen the questions. Are you ready to take on each other?
Oh, God. If we have ready. To, yes, ready. Let's do it.
Get ready. Okay, so this is the action quiz. Are you ready to see which one of you is an action hero?
As ready as I'll ever be.
So let's start with you, Matt. Extraction star Chris Hemsworth headed up the 2012 remake of Red Dawn. In which year was the original released?
I actually know the answer to this one because it was the year I was born, 1984. Also home to such classics as The Terminator, Gremlins.
That is correct. 1 point for you. All right, yes. Jordan, number two. Name the movies featuring these power ballads. I Don't Want to Miss a Thing by Aerosmith. How Do I Live by Leanne Rimes. All for Love by Sting, Rod Stewart and Bryan Adams. I think you'll know this one. And Show Me Heaven by Maria McKee. It's a four-part question. Go.
So I definitely know two of these. Okay. I'm shaky on the other two.
Okay.
So I Don't Want to Miss a Thing, Armageddon, of course.
Yes.
An absolute classic, a banger, you might say.
Yeah.
All for Love, The Three Musketeers. It's a favourite in the Total Film Office. So
yes.
I would have been, you know, exiled if I'd have got that wrong.
Yes.
Instant dismissal.
Yeah.
Exactly. And the other two, I would have to have a complete guess. So
go for it.
I'm not going to. What if I humiliate myself?
Can you remind us? Because I think those were the two I was hazy on as
I'm not going to sing them. I Don't Want to Miss a Thing was Armageddon. You're correct.
Well done.
All for Love, of course, was.
Yeah, of course, of course.
Those raspy voiced guitars. How Do I Live by Leanne Rimes.
I'm going to take a slight guess on this one, but was that Con Air?
Correct. Ding yes. dong. Okay.
How could I forget?
And Show Me Heaven by Maria McKee.
I'm pulling an embarrassing blank here as well.
You're going to have to tell us.
It's Days of Thunder, of course.
Do you know, I kept thinking Top Gun, but I knew it wasn't Top Gun. But
it's the cruiser.
So that's why I was thinking of Top Gun and Tony Scott.
Okay, so back to Matt. In how many of the core Fast and Furious movies, not including Hobbs and Shaw, does Vin Diesel not appear?
How many does he not appear? It's funny that I get this question as Jordan is the Fast and Furious expert, but I'm going to say one. He only doesn't appear in one film.
Okay, I'm sorry. I thought you were saying Fast and Furious 1. I was thinking,
oh, no,
wow.
No.
That's a bold choice.
As far as I know, it's Too Fast, Too Furious is the only one he's not in. Is that right?
Correct.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, Jordan, over to you.
Should point out, even though he's not the main character in Fast and Furious Tokyo Drift, he does appear for a post-credit sting.
All
a
right.
Very exciting post-credit sting. Bringing
Pedantic.
The universe together.
Yeah. All right, so, Jordan, which of these characters is played by Arnie and which by Sly? Lincoln Hawk, John Matrix, Trench, and Marion Cabretti.
Why do I keep getting the multiple choice ones?
I know, it's just worked out this way, but go on. Yeah, but
do you
a
get
go.
A chance for more points, though? Will you get more points than me, say, if you get all four of these right?
Maybe it's a quarter each. We'll have to work this out as we go along.
Okay, well, I'm pretty sure that Lincoln Hawk is Sly in Over the Top.
Correct.
John Matrix is obviously Arnie in Commando.
Correct.
Do I know the next one? Trench. Oh, it sounds really familiar. I'm going to skip this one for now because yeah. I know that Marion Cabretti is Sly again in Cobra.
Yes, correct. Who's Trench? And come on.
Trench isn't coming to me. I'm gonna have to pass.
Throw it over to Matt. Who do you think it is?
This is a slight guess, but is Trench Arnie in Eraser?
It's Arnie, but it's the Expendables.
Yeah, they all have stupid names in that film.
Yeah. Okay, Matt, on to yours. How many years separated the release of Mad Max Beyond the Thunderdome and Mad Max Fury Road?
I should know this because I remember referring to it when I wrote the feature back in 2015. So I know that Mad Max Fury Road came in 2015. So I'm going to guess then 87 for Beyond Thunderdome. And so I'm going to say that would make it 28 years.
Jordan, want to have a go?
Oh, I was going to guess somewhere around there. I'll just say an even 30.
Jordan wins. It is 30 years.
Amazing.
Okay, on to the next one. Jordan, John Wick 3 was subtitled Parabellum. What does it mean in Latin?
Oh, I know this is something to do with war. I know it's war something. Prepare for war?
Correct. Well done.
Yeah, well done.
All right, Matt, on to you. Cop duo Mike Lowrey and Marcus Burnett are otherwise known as what?
Bad Boys.
Bad Boys.
That was a bit easy, I thought. Okay. Jordan, to date, what is Michael Bay's highest grossing movie worldwide?
Oof. Well, this has got to be a Transformers film.
Which one?
But which one? That's the question. I'm going to guess, because I weirdly know that Age of Extinction was the highest grossing film the year it came out.
Yeah.
So I'm going to guess that.
No, Matt, want to go?
That would have been my guess. So I'm going to have to say Transformers Dark of the Moon.
He's got it. With 1.12 billion, it was Transformers Dark of the Moon. Okay, so let's go to Matt. Your final question. The novel Nothing Lasts Forever was adapted as which classic 80s actioner?
That's a complete blank for me, I'm afraid. I'm going to have to pass.
Jordan?
Oh, I know this one. It's Die Hard.
It is Die Hard.
You can see why they changed it.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Jordan, this is your final question. Denzel Washington and director Tony Scott made 5 movies together. Name them.
Ooh, that's a good one. I'll try and do this in chronological order as well, but I may get that wrong. Crimson Tide.
Yes.
Man on Fire.
Yes.
Deja Vu.
Yes.
Taking of Pelham 1-2-3, the remake.
Yes.
And Unstoppable.
Yes.
Oh, he's done it.
Applause for he's Jordan.
Well done. Well done.
Very, very good. Okay, anyone keeping score? Which one of you won?
Well, I don't know how accurately this I was scorekeeping, but I think Jordan won.
I also think Jordan ended up with harder questions, so I'm going to give him an extra star and say he is our champ of action.
Damn.
Yes, action champ, action man.
I hope you listening at home did as well as Jordan. Probably did better.
I mean, I didn't do great, so it wouldn't be hard. Yeah.
Okay, all right, well, that's it for this week. We ended on a quiz high. Don't forget...
Well, some of us did.
Well, you didn't, did you? But bless you.
There's always next week.
There is always next week. We'll do one next week. Okay. Don't forget as well, obviously, there is an issue out now in the shops. What's on the cover, Matt?
Black Widow.
So do pick it up when you go to the supermarket for your daily food shop, or you can get it immediately if you buy or subscribe digitally. And there's also 10% off a subscription with the code INSIDETF at checkout at www.myfavoritemagazines.co.uk. I'm going to go and have a lie down. That felt quite high octane.
Yeah, I'm exhausted.
I need a break here.
Yeah, so have a nice cup of tea and I'll see you back here next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Let's make it the one you want. So let your feelings show and make it.